Welcome, 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 and welcome to the Hexperts Battletech Podcast, Episode 2. What's going on in the Inner Sphere 3025-ish? Your hosts today, myself, Lewis. We've got Tom.
Moshi Moshi.
We've got Nathan.
Hey, yo!
And we've got Dom.
Was that four welcomes?
Four? Well, anyway.
You gave us four welcomes.
Four? Well, what we can have. Did you prefer if I had three?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, right. Next time I'll work on that. Anyway, if you've not listened to episode one, I don't know what you're doing here, but obviously, just a recap, our podcast is main purpose is to show our friend Dom the amazing world of Battletech and trick him into playing games with us. And obviously, anyone else listening, please feel free to listen along. New players, obviously, this might be beneficial for you as well.
I am very feeble and perceptible, and can be convinced to play.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure yet. We've not got you playing yet. Maybe next week. Maybe this week. I don't know. But anyway,
who knows?
But anyway, let's move into our first. Our first section. What have we been up to hobby-wise? For me, I've just finished painting up my Inferno. I'll post that up on in our Instagram, our new Instagram. And
what is that Instagram?
The Instagram is Hexperts_BattleTech_podcast.
Is that Hexperts with one X or three X?
With, well, I suppose you can go four X's. It's with one X. But yeah.
That's our only fan stream, son.
The After Dark episodes. But yeah. Apart from that, I'm just working on building up an Iron Wind Metals Locust. I want to build up one of the Locust 1Es with the two medium lasers and two small lasers, I think. Just because you can never have too many Locusts. Tom, what have you been up to?
Notoriously, you can have too many Locusts.
I think you can have too many. But within the Battletech setting, I think you couldn't have too many Locusts. I suppose you
I don't trust you.
Well, as we found out from last week, Battletech diverges in the 90s, and so the Plague of Locusts still did happen. So you can still have too many.
Yes.
Oh. Does that mean that Moses split the Red Sea with a Beyblade in the Battletech universe as well?
Exactly right.
I think that is pretty correct. I think that is correct. As for me, I've been hobby butterflying among many different things. But I won't bore you with the ones that aren't Battletech related.
No, you can say them. Go ahead. Dom will bore us with some old world stuff, I'm sure.
Well, mine's old world as well. Unfortunately, I've been buying and painting some old world stuff. But do not despair. I have actually been doing some Battletech related stuff as well.
Which is?
Firstly, I am in the middle of doing up some Lyran Commonwealth mechs who have defected to the Vesper Marches. So the two that I've painted up are a Black Hawk KU, which is the Nova we have at home, and the Gotterdammerung, which is a specifically Lyran mech that's very fun because it has a torso-mounted cockpit.
Can you say that three times while spinning around, Tom?
Unfortunately, much like a Lyran noble put in charge of a regiment, I am unable to do that. So I'm hoping that double sixes no longer kills me. Very fun.
Cool.
Apart from that, really, I've been painting up a couple of other bits and pieces. I've painted up an Eris, which I bought after converted my last one into a Hell.
After you were taught the error of your ways. Or the Eris of your ways.
This is why they pay him the big bucks.
Listeners, if by any chance you have a Catalyst premium Eris, do not spend 4 hours converting it into a Hell and lovingly paint it in a tricolour camo scheme just for it to be absolutely awful and worse than the original model. So, there's my PSA this week. But I've also, talking about Iron Wind Metals, I have been doing my Dola as well, a little Capellan sneaky mech that looks like it's straight from Titanfall.
You do like that.
So, it's bloody mint. And then also I've been putting some last minute touches on a Warhammer that I need for the Hinterlands campaign.
Can't go wrong with a Warhammer, really.
Absolutely not, and this is the 9S, so it's got two ERP PCs, two medium lasers, and a Streak SRM6. So it's a pretty decent mech. But that's really all from me this week.
Well, Nathan, what have you been up to?
Oh God, let me see. There's a list of things here. I've been coping, I've been steaming, I've been dilating. I've just not had a good hobby week in the Hinterlands campaign.
Yeah,
let's just say clan mechs don't do well.
Do well. We'll
say 3,000 points.
I have been. Did
you just say clan mech singular? Sorry.
Yeah, but I've been trying to tell you maybe don't start off with the clan mechs. But we'll probably go through Tom's Hinterland stuff as well. I've not got anything to say because I've been away. But what else? You see, you've been seething and coping and with the Hinterlands campaign. Have you painted up any mechs for that? Anything?
I've been applying a bit more green to my Flamberg and my Jade Hawk, as well as finally getting the legs built for my Gear Falcon.
Yeah, that sounds right. That's close enough how you say it.
Yeah, it's all Falcons and Hawks with the Jade Falcons, ain't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than that, not really much hobby.
It's cool. And Tom, did you get up to anything crazy in the Hinterlands this week?
Not really. I've just kind of been trucking, to be fair.
Morlan not took any more souls?
He hasn't, actually. He was taking a week out because he kind of got a bit messed up before the quadruple six, which blew up Nathan's previous crossbow. So, which is partly why he's coping and seething, and then Ian doing him a disservice. It was I watched that game. It was very unfortunate. To be fair, Thorsen's Thunderers are doing pretty well in the Hinterlands. We've got some bucks, some mechs, and a potential coup happening. So, you know, all in all, pretty good.
Oh, God. My force sounds very vanilla in comparison. And obviously, last but not least, Dom, what have you been up to any Battletech hobby for us this week?
No.
What a surprise.
What have I been doing this week? So I have been playing Marvel Crisis Protocol for the first time in a good while, actually. And I played it against another one of the guys at the club. He'd never played it before. We had a good little intro game. And that's because I started playing Marvel Crisis Protocol again because I'm now playing Marvel Rivals. So if anyone wants a really bad teammate on Marvel Rivals, hit me up. I'm Bronze 3. Not great. I know it's a video game and that's kind of sacrilege here. But I'm enjoying Marvel Rivals at the moment. Hobby-wise, though,
Are we going to have to put your Marvel Rivals username in the description for this episode, Dan?
Yeah, it's not going to be like a cryptographic puzzle that people have to work out, right? I hope we can put it in the description.
Super.
I mean, it's been pretty barren for me, hobby-wise. I just got back from a Warhammer 40,000 event, and I won one out of three games. But you know what? I'll take that as a minor positive. I don't really play a lot of Warhammer 40k, so to get one win at quite a competitive event, it's pretty tidy.
We're proud of you anyway there, Dom, for doing that.
Thanks, buddy. Someone has to be.
But anyway, next on to our newest segment, a fan favourite I gathered, is a trivia, 80s trivia for Dom. I've got some trivia sent in. One from Adam Molman from the UK Battletech Discord, the leader of the UK Battletech Discord, the main man himself. Apparently, okay. Liverpool were good at football in the 80s. That is a piece of trivia for you.
That is certainly some pretty underground trivia.
Yeah, I thought they were only good at football now.
The Premier League started in 1995 and nothing happened before that.
Okay. I can't disprove that. Sounds correct to me. Another one. Warhammer 40,000 started in 1987, 3 years after Battle Droids, aka early BattleTech. So obviously, BattleTech predates that newfangled game.
Is Warhammer just a derivative of BattleTech?
It must be. Pretty much, it's. I think they just copied it.
I mean, to be fair, have you seen the old Dreadnoughts? They look pretty BattleTechy to me.
Yeah, can't go wrong.
It sounds like a bit of a rip-off.
And that's from our buddy Arthur, CDT agent from the UK Discord. But those are the two fan submissions for today. Other ones I've found for you, Dom, is, do you know that CNN started broadcasting in the 1980s?
What does CNN stand for?
Nobody knows that. Let's move on. And also Zimbabwe gained independence in the 1980s. Sure some people love that.
And that makes me really happy.
I'm glad that you're happy about that. Also, Post-it notes were released in the 1980s. Yeah.
You know what? Honestly, I feel my brain swelling with knowledge.
Yeah, this is a trivia and lore podcast.
it's just knowledge, not too much.
Talking of trivia, CNN stands for Cable News Network, which obviously is very, very, very topical today, where we're all still watching cable television.
There we go. Anyway, if we've got any more 80s trivia or any general things you want to send in to us, please send them into hexpertshelpline@gmail.com, and one of us will be sure to look at those at some point before the next episode.
And just to reiterate, we do like genuinely really, really love fan mail. Makes it sound so crazy, but that's the only way I can put it. Basically, we want to start a parasocial relationship with you.
The other way, though.
The other way, though.
Not you to us. It's
we want a reverse parasocial relationship with you.
Yep. I can see it now. 12 months. In about 12 months, there's going to be tens of people with Tom's face on the mug.
It's going
to be amazing.
We've already got the images saved for that mug.
Tens of listeners.
Across
Warsaw.
Yeah.
That's for the After Dark episode.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Keep that place secret.
Super duper. All right. Any more for 80s trivia?
Absolutely not. Super. Let's crack on.
Crack on. Cool. Then just some more upcoming releases. Some of that I kind of wanted to talk about last episode, but they're still a little bit further off. I don't even think they've got release dates yet. But these kind of tie in with the Davian packs that have coming out currently. We've got some Cretan packs. These apparently are still subject to change, but I think they're kind of locked in. There's two packs coming out. We've got the House Cretan Command Lance. That's got the Rokurubi Kubia. I might Tom.
Luke,
Tom,
do you want me to
Tom,
take
Tom,
that?
Tom, you try it, Tom.
It's the Rokuro Kubi.
Which is a battle mech of all time. I think it's got a light autocannon 5, a sword, weighs 35 tons. Looks pretty cool. Looking forward to seeing that in plastic. What we got next? Got the Grand Dragon. Obviously, we all probably know what the Grand Dragon looks like. It looks like a dragon, a bit more grander. It's ERPPC. Two medium lasers, I think. Got the
I think that variant is the RPPC two medium lasers.
I think it's the standard brackets Grand Dragon.
Yeah,
we've got the Shiro coming up next, which is one LBX 2, four clan LRM 10s and a sword. It's pretty cool. And lastly, in that pack, we've got the Akuma, or basically the Cretan Atlas. He's a pretty fancy guy. He's got a load of weapons, 90 tons, one ERPPC, one medium pulse laser, one streak SRM4, one medium laser, one MRM30, one LBX 10 autocannon, and one streak SRM6. Any opinions on those guys? Anything you guys are looking forward to?
Yes, I am. I was waiting to see whether I was going to like step on anyone's toes, but obviously everyone else has no opinions whatsoever, so I will talk at length about my love for the Rokuro Kubi.
Oh, dear.
WizKids, I mean, this is going to be a hot take. WizKids did nothing wrong. Clicky tech, best tech.
I'm not sure that's a very popular opinion there, Tom.
it's a great opinion because they brought out the Rokuro Kubi. What could you want more than very blatantly Japanese-styled armor with a sword and a sashimono? Because, look, I'll be honest, these things are really cool. And they're also specifically used for honor duels between warriors. So
they are a cool-looking mech. I know, personally, I'm keen on getting the Grand Dragon, although it's not going to be far off, I think, what the standard dragon is visually. And the Akuma's, I'm definitely keen on. I like a big mech of a big skull face. But Nathan, were you saying, is there any of those you're keen on?
Yeah, I was just trying not to step on other people's toes. as well. A big pause. Yeah, no, Grand Dragon, great model. I haven't actually heard of any of the other ones previously to this, but the Akuma does sound really nasty.
He's basically the Kuritan Atlas. I think the best way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. And then the next pack, we've got the Venom, which I think when that comes out, we'll probably see quite a few of those. Yeah, we got the spider and the Venom. I think there's got that kind of Spider-Man theme going on. The standard variant comes with 4 medium pulse lasers on a... How much does he weigh? He weighs a certain amount of tons. I don't know off the top of my head, actually. He's a light mech anyway. He's going to jump around and shoot you with his pulse lasers, and he's not going to be very popular with people after being shot by him. Next, we've got the Avatar. I think it's one of the first Innosphere Army mechs.
That's correct. Alongside the Black Hawk KU and the not Mad Cat, which is the Rakshasa, now that I remember the name. Yeah. These are the oops, we have clan mechs at home.
Yeah,
mechs, which I know, Nathan, for you who suffers from clan mech point costage, actually taking a Innosphere clan mech, definitely not new design, please don't steal, might be the move.
Yeah,
it just might be.
Yeah, well, for this one anyway, fixed on these, you've got 2 medium lasers, and we'll go for the primary configuration because I assume that's going to be the one that comes in the box. It's got 2 medium pulse lasers, a LBX-10. 2 LRM-10s with Artemis 4 and 2 machine guns. That's pretty cool. Nice loadout for that. And 70 tons. What have we got after that? We've got the Chimera after that. Looks like a little fun fella. He's 40 tons. Comes with 1 machine gun, 1 ER medium laser, and an ER large laser, and an MRM-20, very Cretan. I think he's got a little, in the artwork, I think some of them have got a little sword as well, which is pretty cool.
Off topic, you obviously keep mentioning tons, right, in this game. Tons are an important feature. What's the biggest, how tonny can tonnage get, basically, is my question.
Well, generally,
pretty tonny.
Yeah, pretty tonny. Generally, mechs that you see on the battlefield usually go between 20 to 100 tons. Yep. You can get ultralights that go lower than that, and like protomechs, etc., which we'll get to at some point. And then you can go above that. You got your super heavies, but the majority of them you're going to see are going to be between that 20 to 100 tons. And you'll see that we'll go through this in more detail in the future, but your light mechs, medium, heavies, and assaults is how that's split up. But yeah, and lastly for this pack, we've got the Panther, which is going to be, apparently it might be a Panther 10K, which I'm a bit confused why that's coming out, because it's going to be just the Panther with a Streak SRM4 and an ERPPC, so it's going to be very similar looking loadout, I assume, to the one we've got already, but I assume they might make him look a bit, might fancy up some of those guns to show that they're different.
Cool. Slap a Sashimano on that bad boy, and he is a Kuritan mech.
Put
the styled shoulder armor on it, the Sashimano, and it's a new mech. I mean, come on, it's just printed money. Randall, hire me.
But yeah, I think that pack definitely got some really interesting mechs. I know the Venom. I know you've used them in the past before, Tom, and they've been pretty devastating for you. And
Yeah, I do actually have a little bit of a little confession to make. I completely forgot I am actually painting up a Venom.
Oh, right now. What a surprise.
I know, it's the bait and switch. It's the old metal one, though, so he's a little bit more pugilist stance. He's sort of got one hand up, looking to box. But I am looking forward to CGL making it not look bad. That's no slight on Ralph Arthur, but I do know that these things are old.
It's they don't look, they look of their time period. But I think what you mean to say might be, I'm looking for them to be modernized slightly with CAD design, and rather than the hand sculpted. cool.
Next time a lady asks me how old I think they are, I'm going to say, you look like you were of your time.
That's what you... yeah. But of those packs, the Ranger pack's definitely a lot more mech-looking mechs, whereas that first pack, the Command Lance, they've very much got that Japanese look on a lot of those mechs, which be interesting to see how that comes out in plastic.
What kind of Japanese are we talking about? Are we talking like sort of samurai, ninja?
Samurai.
Or like modern Japanese or samurai?
Okay. Yeah. This is samurai. Well, we are going to get onto this in the next section, but the Draconis Combine is ruled by Bushido, so of course they're samurai.
Yeah.
Ah, of course.
Yeah, anything else you guys to mention on the Ranger Lance there? Or...
Nope.
Nope. Cool. I'm looking forward to them both.
Just before we
move on.
Yeah.
The releases for BattleTech, are they generally just kind of, you know, here's a new weapon, here's a new thing, or is it like, okay, we've got some brand new mechs that have never existed before? Or are we just kind of revising the old ones now?
It's a bit of both. Dom, these packs, some of these have got mechs, like Panthers, which are older designs, have been there since the start. As Tom mentioned, some of these are Wiz Kids, kind of era kind of mechs, like the Dark Ages kind of mechs. And some of them, some of the ones coming up and more recently are going to be from what they call the Ilkalan era, which we haven't gone across just yet. But they do seem to like to spread out kind of the releases that you get. Like, so you get a mix of refresh mechs from a lot of the previous eras, and there are some new ones coming out. Some of the ones I'm quite keen on is seeing the plastic hammerhead. I'm a fan of the hammerhead. But yeah, so there's a bit of both. They refresh and they release new things for us as well, and new variants of older mechs.
Okay.
Cool.
As well, it seems that at the moment they've been doing a thing where they'll bring out a book, like a manual about what the Draconis Combine are up to, like they have, or they're about to, and then they bring out force packs around it.
Yeah.
Like the special variants that you can get in there.
Yeah, I think this was supposed to tie in a bit closer than it has currently, but we've got there's a Davian combat manual and the Kuritan combat manual out at the moment. I'm not sure if we've got them on paper in the UK yet, but I think these are supposed to tie in roughly with the release of those. They're a little bit later than they wanted them to come out, but obviously the idea is that they've kind of got that theme and they're following through with that. Cool. But yeah, if there's nothing else, we'll move on to the next topic after a short break. We'll catch you guys in a minute. Okay, welcome. Only three welcomes this time.
Back to the
main topic for this session, which is going to be what's going on the Innosphere 3025-ish. This time we're going to be talking about the main houses, the main players in this time period. At this time, the Innosphere is split into five main sections, maybe you call it, controlled by the houses. Closer to Terra is not controlled by the houses. We'll go into that in a bit more detail later on. And further afield, out of the Innosphere, there are what they call periphery states that aren't part of the main houses, and we'll have a talk about them in the future as well. If you're following on our YouTube, then you might be able to see a picture of the Innosphere, if we can get Nathan to do that at some point. Or if you just look up BattleTech Innosphere map, you'll see what we're talking about now. But yeah, and let's have a little look at each of the sections.
So this is sort of like a Game of Thrones, Dune, sort of houses control everything. Are there any sort of real world parallels to the houses? You know, is like the Queen and her, the Windsor still knocking around, or is it just like made up?
It's 3025 now, so there are some, I think some of the houses you'd find there, they're derived from societies that might exist now, or there's some themes that we would know of from now or the past that might influence things. Okay. But there's not really, I don't think there's anyone around from our time period, because it's been such a long time and people generally...
Charles,
Yeah.
Died 2 years before we sent the podcast, so yeah.
Yeah.
He managed to live 1,000 years, but he didn't make it.
Didn't make it.
That's when they put him in his worm body, right?
Yeah.
Well, moving on. Let's have a little talk about the different houses. First, we've got the Federated Sons. Usually kind of represents the brackets, good guys. There isn't really a good guys kind of in Battletech, but they're the kind of house that you'll usually see the perspective from in a good chunk of the books going that you read. They've got a aspects of the US, kind of UK kind of government control, and they are ruled by a first prince. They've got about 500 planets, with their capital being New Avalon. The military forces for the Federated Sons are the Armed Forces of the Federated Sons, which is the AFFS. Popular forces that you might have heard of.
Nose, isn't it?
What was that? Sorry, Dom.
It's quite on the nose, isn't it? The military arm is called the Armed Forces of the...
Is it? Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. some of the regiments of renown that you might have heard of, probably none. I don't really know many off the top of my head. They're a bit boring. They're very professional. They're not very standoutish. I don't know if you guys have got any that you know off the top of your heads.
I mean, the most famous. The one that most people will know of, if they've read any of Battletech, is probably the Kittery Training Battalion, where Justin Allard / Zhang is stationed just before this period. But as Lewis said, they're very professional, and, you know, they're kind of... There's no real personalities, apart from, you know, Andrew Redburn, my beloved. You know, these people are very professional. They do their jobs well, and short of Michael Hasek, Davian being a little slippery snake. Everyone kind of does their job properly.
Yeah, no one stands out. They've not got, not massively anyway, compared to some of the other forces we'll see coming up.
So are these like the nerds then? You're giving me like the nerd, where I would fit into if I was in the Battletech universe.
I think that's probably not a bad call. It's probably where I think some of us would lean towards, maybe where we might live.
I mean, they literally have the New Avalon Institute of Science, which makes all of the new
stuff.
That's
so nerdy.
Big nerd.
If you've got school, you're a big nerd.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say they're vanilla. There's a lot of stuff that going on, if you dig further into their history, that it's quite interesting for them, and they've got a lot of interesting stuff going on their borders. But yeah, they are the kind of vanilla faction. Some of the popular mechs for them, Blackjacks, very cool mechs, Enforcers, and Valkyries, you'll see them quite often. And you'll probably notice, if you start looking at some of the mechs the Federated Sons run, is they have a lot of autocannons, which I think is pretty cool. But yeah, it's a pretty quick overview on them. Any questions on them, or anything you guys want to point out before we carry on?
Who's Andrew who? What's his name again? Andrew Redburns?
Redburn.
Okay. Yeah.
Old Andy Redburn.
Andy Redburn.
The goat. That's what he
Andy means. Redburn sounds like a estate agent, but sure.
Do you want to go any further into Andrew Redburn, Tom, or are we going to leave that for a later time?
We'll leave him for... Yeah, the fourth Succession War episode. We'll call it the Redburn Roundup. Because he does actually get up to quite a lot of stuff during his life, but all of that happens coming, you know, quite a bit later.
I'd say he's like the Forrest Gump of the 3020s.
Okay.
That's just rude. Andrew Redburn is a capable mech warrior just because he keeps losing his mechs.
Well, yeah, but he just keeps running into like the most important stuff that's happening at that point. Just all the time.
Well, next on my list, we've got the Capellan Federation. Who's taking the Capellan?
That's right. And it's going to be me. So yeah, let me give you a little tour of Capellan space. The Capellans are ran by the Liaos, and they are a mainly Chinese-based faction, as in, like, culturally, based off Chinese, so they're big into Taoism, and they've got like they practice Tai Chi a lot as well.
Is it ancient China or modern China?
Like medieval China for a lot of their like governance systems, but they're in the central southern part of the galaxy. So, say if you'd imagine where if you put Terra in the middle, even though it's a bit off to the left in reality, there's a nice chunk right below it that is the Liaos. So yeah, these guys were formed by Duke Franco Liao in 2367. And at the moment, in 3025, they're led by Max Liao. So, a few things they've been up to recently is this thing called the Antony Revolt, which has just thrown Marik Space into a bit of chaos. And they also replaced...
One second, what's Marik Space?
Oh, we'll get onto that, I think.
Oh, yep, we'll get onto that later on. I think okay. Tom's got that, have you?
Yeah, I was. If you hadn't brought up the Anton Revolt here, I was going to bring it up in mine. I'll still bring it up in mine and talk more about it. But things not go so well.
Yeah, okay. And
so I'm going to find out about Marik Space shortly. Okay.
And their major, I don't know whether to say rivals or the archenemies, are actually the Federated Suns. And they've been doing some wacky stuff. Like, they tried to replace Hans Davian, the leader, with a body double. And they're working with one of the princes to try and overthrow him as well.
Those damn Capellans.
One thing you got to know about Capellan space, though, is that they have these things called citizens. And I know that sounds like a daft thing. But in Capellan space, your citizenship is not guaranteed.
Okay. Are we talking sort of Starship Troopers style, where you have to fight in a war to become...
Yeah, but instead of fighting in a war, you just have to and just love the country. You have to do a bunch of public works and contribute to the like community around you. But it does come... Like, when you're 16, you get tested, and then if you fail that, you get tested again at 18. And if you fail, though, you become a servitor.
What's a servitor in terms of Battletech servitors?
So, unlike 40k, where you have no rights and you turn into a robot, a servitor in Battletech is that you have no rights.
Oh.
At one point, it got to where a lot of the population was actually servitors, and rich nobles could just buy servitors. But, don't worry. It's very easy, just give yourself to the state and just love the state and you're fine. And citizens, they live great, they get free healthcare, they get educated, and they get their retirement paid off, and they're usually left to themselves. But when you're a citizen, you do have to swear loyalty to Capellans and to the Chancellor. And whenever there's an invasion, you're just going to get drafted instantly.
Oh. So you become so if you're a citizen, you're sort of part of a
militia force. Yeah. Okay. That's trying to protect. And also, at any time, like you can be woken at 3 o'clock in the morning and get called by the governor and say, we need you to go to this planet and we need you to train to be this and you need to be this. And then you instantly have to pack your bags and go. However, it's all at the state's expense. The state pays for the entirety of it, which is quite nice.
But it's sort of what Lewis does as a day job, then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
So it's like they just get free training. The notable worlds are Xi'an, which is the main planet. It used to be Capella, but during one of the civil wars, it got blown up.
Oh, dear.
Scientology.
No, it's a cappella because it's without accompaniment.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Everyone stand up and clap.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And the two other well-known ones, which have a big role to play in the Force Succession War, are Saint Ives and Tikhonov. Yeah.
Saint Ives.
Like the cornerstone.
Saint Ives.
Yeah. Saint Ives.
Oh, right, okay. Well, that's...
So a lot of the planets in Battletech, you'll start to run into this, are just named after, like, places in real life.
They're not very imaginative. A lot of these people.
Yeah. Like, you know, there's a Coventry, don't you?
I've heard of Coventry, but I'm quietly awaiting the arrival of like Bradford or
Stoke
like
Trent.
Slough,
Base
Slough.
Yeah,
Stoke
some
on
of the
Space
most
Trent.
Yeah, some of their most notable mechs are the Catapult, the Thunderbolt, which was originally built on Tikhonov, but was then moved to, I think it was the Free Worlds League. And then the Vindicator.
We do like a Vindicator.
I've got a few more mechs in the future, but they aren't around by 3025, so I'll skip them for now. So yeah, that's just a little jaunt around Capellan space. Next up.
Yeah. I was going to say, is there any weapons that the Capellans are known for? Can't think of any off the top of my head.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Cool.
Yeah. Next up, we have, I believe, if there's no more questions, Tom with the Free Worlds League.
Whoa. Probably going from one of the societies with the least freedoms to one of the societies with the most freedoms. On the western edge of the Capellan space, we have the Free Worlds League. Now, unlike all these despots and these crazy maniacs running their little tin pot republics, the Free Worlds League isn't actually run by a single person. It is a federalized government, kind of an amalgam similar to the US system. So, it's run by the Mareks, and they've been running it for a while. But technically, if people got too unhappy, they could unseat them. But, much like the American system, it is open to readjustment, shall we say. So,
okay.
Yeah. So, the Free Worlds League is actually built up from different provinces, which then make up the Marek Parliament, which then kind of make policy for the Captain General. So the main provinces that we're looking at, so the central one, where Atreus, the capital, is located, is known as the Marek Commonwealth. This is one of the richest provinces, because obviously what you need to do when we're all equal is to kind of centralise all of the money where you live.
Of course.
Just makes sense.
Just got a quick question, Tom, before you carry on.
Absolutely.
I've noticed that a lot of the names, and obviously we mentioned it with St. Ives, a lot of the names in the Battletech universe have these kind of, whether it's a historical reference or a geographical reference, they have a reference to historical culture.
Yes.
So is there like an Atreus in the Battletech history, or are they talking about Atreus from, I don't know, Greek or something? Are they talking about that Atreus?
So, obviously, because the Battletech universe is our universe as well, much like we name things nowadays from things that happened 1,000 years ago with absolutely no regard to what the original context was.
Sure.
That's kind of what's happening here. During the big gold rush, originally, when everyone got founded, they were just popping planets up and calling them whatever the hell they wanted, really.
There's more planets than you can name, like, cool names, so you have to just dig into the past and steal some. Right,
yeah,
you can't
pretty
just
much.
Document your own. Okay, got you.
Yeah, so then we have the second founding member, which is known as the Principality of Regulus, and this was originally a mercantile alliance, and then this was kind of half-ruled by an offshoot of the Camerons, who used to be the Star League rulers. So this kind of gets integrated with what's known as the Duchy of the Orient as well. So these are sort of, this is also a smaller kind of ducal area run by a singular family, which kind of swears loyalty under the Free Worlds League. There are also other areas. So one that's quite, shall we say, fractious, despite its minor status, is the Duchy of Anjurian. They're fiercely independent, even within the Free Worlds League structure. They are kind of very, very independent. And to be fair, they spend most of their time trying to leave unsuccessfully. So, you know, not great. But
do they not have a choice? Do they have like any kind of referendums they could?
No, Dom. Of course they have a choice, but they won't leave because of the implication.
Implications.
Oh, I got dark quick.
Implications.
Yeah, the implication. So of course they wouldn't leave until they do, and then the implication. Anyway, I'm sure that never happens. We're not like those other kind of crazy despots.
No, of course not.
Absolutely. And, you know, unlike those crazy despots that have singular cultures, actually, the Free Worlds League is just an absolute melting pot of different cultures. Whilst the lingua franca, so the local official language, is English, apparently, if you are in Marik space, you can also hear quite commonly Czech, Arabic, Urdu, languages from all across Terra. And much like America, they have got this pull yourself up by your bootstrap spirit. So, you know, it's kind of this whole idea of being your own man, making yourself and pushing yourself to be the best you can be. And if you go into Marik space, you can make it happen.
So is it sort of American dream / American nightmare sort of?
Yes.
You know, you can technically achieve everything, but most people don't. Is that kind of the...
Yeah, that's very much the vibe that it's giving, because there is a lot of discrimination in the Free Worlds League. And a lot of these things, you know, as Nathan was saying, obviously citizens within the Capellan space have their own sort of free healthcare and all. There is a class of have-nots in Marik space. So, getting topical, much like America.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously all of this freedom does lead to a slight issue, which is that people think they can kind of do whatever they damn want, leading us on to the Marik Civil War, or Anton's Revolt. Now, those cheeky little Capellans thought they could influence the brother of the current Captain General, Janos Marik, to rebel against him and try and put himself on the throne, try and get Anton Marik on the throne, which would then allow the Capellans to take some planets. And they were the only ones involved, really. There was definitely not another organization trying to destabilize the Free Worlds League.
I feel like I'm picking up on a sense of...
No one else was involved.
Okay. I feel like you're telling me to be quiet now.
No one else was involved. Vsar Christopher was aligned to nobody. He was on his own. He was working on his own. Long story short, Anton Marik gets killed by the Wolf's Dragoons, who are a mercenary company who we will cover, I think, next week, I do believe.
Potentially next week
we'll get onto mercenaries, who are a massive part of this universe. But long story short, the rebellion is crushed. It's quite bloody. The Wolf's Dragoons kind of kill everyone who's on Anton's side, because their leader's brother gets killed, and the leader's wife is executed as a traitor. It doesn't go too super well. But, the Free Worlds League is really kind of united all of the time, and they are always super happy with each other.
Okay, so this is kind of the whole sort of Westeros Game of Thrones, like everyone's under the rule of the king, but there's definitely some internal friction, let's say.
Yeah, in
the setting.
Absolutely. And talking about internal friction, a great house that runs on internal friction, we have next the Draconis Combine.
Well, before that though, Tom.
Oh, sorry, no, the Lauren Commonwealth.
But before that, Tom, what could you tell me about the military forces of the Free Worlds League?
Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. I completely forgot about them, because they actually don't do anything except kill themselves.
That's true.
In 3025. The military force of the Free Worlds League is known as FWLM, the Free Worlds League Military. Wow, so original. And it's often made up by... So it kind of works on a levy system. So all of the different provinces have their own militaries, which then can be taken by the larger FWLM in times of crisis. As for specific mechs, they kind of have a lot of the old manufacturing base. So a lot of Star League mechs that are still around. are produced there. However, if I'm right in thinking, they do have a problem where they can't make PPCs.
Yeah, they I think they. I don't know if they can make them or if they don't. They struggle to make them as many as they need. So they often substitute PPCs and variants that they make with large lasers.
Yeah, so I would say if you see a battle mech that should have a PPC and instead it has a large laser, it was probably made in Marek Space.
Cool. Mm. But some mechs they're known for? Orions?
So they do have Orions. They also make Warhammers, Wolverines, Griffins, Locusts. Probably the most interesting to me is the Hermes 2. Because it is kind of a cute little guy.
Yeah. Cool. That's obviously the Free Worlds League. But not the Draconis Combine next. Carrying on around the Inosphere. No. We've got the Lyran Commonwealth.
The Lyran Commonwealth ran by the Stoners. As you can tell by the second name there, they are a very Germanic faction.
Is it okay that you say Steiners? Because that feels like...
That's their name.
Okay, well, it feels prejudiced to say Steiners.
Don't like it. The thing is, they're not... The thing is, they're not even German. I think they just decided to start pretend they're German.
So,
I feel like the one German faction being named after the glasses that they carry their beer in is derivative.
Well, the Steiners, or the Lyran Commonwealth, are... a faction located in the northeast of the galaxy, right above the Free World League and right next to the Draconis Combine.
Yep.
A very safe place. They're considered one of the most wealthy houses in the inner sphere. And sorry, my brain's just like short circuited for a second.
So being wealthy in this universe, right? What does that actually entail? Are you just like trying to constantly climb the power structure, or are you just kind of happy to kind of hoard your wealth like fantasy dragon style?
A lot of the time in the inner sphere, if a nation's wealthy, means they're just going to build a big army and try and take over everyone else, which is...
So no one's trying to like better their people, are they? They're just going straight.
I'd say they're doing pretty well. I mean, they've got one of the highest education standards in the entirety of the Inner Sphere, having multiple universities spread throughout their holdings. But as well as this, socially, they are probably one of the best ones. They've got a wide multitude of people coming from Eastern Europe, Australia, Asia, Africa, and they've got no... they've got a complete separation of church and state, no state religion, and discrimination of all kinds just based on race, ethnicity, religion, even political thoughts, pretty much a thing of the past.
So it's like real life then?
Yeah.
Definitely.
I understand though. Where would you, particularly Nathan, where would you see yourself fitting into this kind of... I mean, this can go for everyone. Which like system, which planet do you feel like you would like suit the most?
I personally would like Tharkad, which is their capital planet, but it's known to be really cold there. It's just an old school, pretty much.
Okay, and what about you, Lewis?
I think I'd probably end up wanting to go to the Lyran Commonwealth or the Federated Suns, just because that's probably areas of space I could probably relate to. I think some of the other houses and some of the other areas work a little bit different. Probably Free Worlds League, probably something I could live in, I think. But the Capellan area and Draconis Combine, which are going to come to, are a little bit different and aren't quite what I'd be used to.
And Tom, what do you think? Where would you like to live if you lived in Battletech land?
Definitely think I would live on Terra.
And Terra being Earth, isn't it? This is
Terra. Terra is.
Yeah. Okay.
I would love to work for Comstar for no particular reason.
For no particular reason.
They're just the phone company.
They're not very important, well, are they?
We'll get onto it in a little bit, but they definitely have their hands in many pies.
We're only talking about the major powers here, aren't we? Or would we talk about the phone company?
They're not very important. Yeah. Cool.
To round off the Lorans, we've got what mechs have got. So they're well known for having Zeus's Commandos, which are the second or third mech to be made, just full stop, after the Mackie and I can't remember the second one. And then, mostly for the meme, the Atlas, which is known to be employed in the Steiner Recon Lances.
They might not be actually what they use for their Recon Lances, but they... That plays into, as Nathan was talking about earlier, that they do very well for themselves. And they obviously project this as well with their military forces. So they have a lot of larger heavy and assault mechs in their forces. It also, what they're known for as well within their military is they've not got the best generals. So they generally either they swarm you with lots of heavy mechs, but the guys actually controlling them and in charge don't really know what they're doing. They just kind of win by attrition of better quality materiel and a lot of it.
Right, okay. I understand.
And in the past, it has been quite rocky because they're ruled by an Archon, but there's also a lot of... would the term be princes for them? Other members of royalty which are related to the Archon. There's been a couple assassination attempts to the point where, as a security measure, in the Archon's throne room, there is two griffins, two 10 to 20 meter tall, 50 ton mechs just hanging around protecting the Archon.
So yeah. I fully thought you were talking about the mythical creature.
No. That would be cool.
Both are cool. But I think... I'm not sure how well they would do, especially considering that the Griffins generally aren't known for having any anti-infantry weapons. So,
I think when it comes to one man, Eliza would do a very good job.
Yeah, I suppose that is true. They are usually armed with PPCs and LRM-10. So, after the cup, which ones they've actually got in the throne room?
What if it's like a big Sam Sulek kind of prime beef of a man?
Yeah,
surely he could at least take one laser. I mean, the thing is, right, with lasers, right, mm-hmm. like in real life we haven't really got a concept of how strong a laser could be, but I feel like sci-fi lasers are just all over the place. You never know whether you're going to get this really like amazing explosion or if it's just like a little zap and like it bounces off some armor.
Mech kind of scale lasers, if you're hit by one of those, you're definitely not getting back up after that.
There is a hole in you. These are the kinds of lasers where they melt steel when they hit it.
I'm really sorry to kill this conversation dead in its tracks, but the two griffins in the throne room are not stock griffins.
Oh my.
They are Griffin 1 RGs, specifically designed by Lyrans. So this is how rich they are. They specifically designed a mech. So to make two of them, to put them in a throne room. So, unlike the original complement, it does drop the PPC and LRM racks.
Yeah.
Instead, they have a large and medium laser in the right.
Yeah.
A medium and a small laser in each torso, and also two machine guns.
That makes sense. I would trust those to protect
And also,
me.
Because they're inside, they have removed the jump jets.
Yeah, they probably don't need those.
So... I will just say, whilst the Lyrans do have a history of having social general not being the most competent, they did actually think about this a little bit.
Yeah, super duper. Cool.
That's been me stumbling through the Lyrans. Has anyone got any questions?
No, I'd say it's very on point for Lyrans, I think I'd say there. I don't know if anyone else agrees with that. I've got nothing else. Anyone else got any questions for Lyrans?
So I think very on point for the Lyrans. The only thing is Zeus is a battle mech of all time. Was specifically created to keep the social generals alive. It's sort of low armor and quite a high armor.
Yeah.
And decent heat sinking is so that they can't accidentally
cook themselves.
Cook themselves or die. And it also, it's a pretty good command mech, so it's kind of like they've put the training wheel on the idiots that got put in charge because they bought a commission.
Yeah.
They were like, you guys just have a mech of all time.
Yeah. Cool. Well, then let's move on to Draconis Combine. That's one for me. Draconis Combine, as we've talked about before, they've kind of got that Japanese Bushido military feudal kind of theme to them. Yeah, they've got about 350 planets, and since we're talking about languages people are speaking, you'll probably see mostly Japanese. They obviously do speak English, but there's also Swedish spoken within the Draconis Combine.
Like PewDiePie style, like Japanese, Swedish sort of,
I think it's more just they've got quite a large contingent of Swedish descent on some of the worlds in Draconis Combine, which may...
Do they do karate?
They follow...
Do they have their own form of like martial arts?
They do have martial... I think they've got some sort of martial arts. They do follow Bushido. They've got samurai swords. They do is it seppuku? How do you say it? Seppuku.
Seppuku. That's when you jam a knife in your belly, isn't it?
Yeah, and they get your head cut off. So it's that kind of place. So
bad place.
It's quite different to obviously some of the planets we've seen before, or some of the areas we've seen before. It's controlled by the coordinator. And what he says goes.
So is this like a sort of Fallout? What the reference I've got there is Fallout in the Fallout shelters in the game Fallout, you know, the video game?
Yeah.
So you've got like a big boss, haven't you, who like everyone has to abide by. Is that this kind of vibe where it's like a closed system and there's like one guy and he just, whatever he says goes?
Well, it's usually someone from the Cretan bloodline. It is pretty much whatever he says goes.
So they're all Nepo babies.
I think that you'd probably say that, I think. Just going back to that whole Swedish thing as well, the big Swedish contingent obviously doesn't cause them any issues, and they won't be any secessions of areas within their space going forward in the future.
No.
No, definitely not.
Free my Rasselhag boys!
Yeah, they do have some issues with that, which we'll see shortly. Maybe we'll see shortly, and then we won't see for very long after that. Draconis Combine, their military forces are the Draconis Combine mustard soldiery. Forces you see for them, Sword of Light, Legion of Vega, the Ryukin, and who's in charge is the is it Takeshi Kurita at this point? Very popular with a lot of people, a lot of units.
Does he have a castle?
They do have a castle. I think if you went to if you went to Luthien, it would look like what you'd think of a traditional Japanese kind of design. They would have pagodas and like you've got it's what you'd kind of expect from like a feudal Japanese design is what is kind of carried through. We don't see it yet, but later on, a lot of the mechs start taking on more of a Japanese design. They start taking on swords, hats, and they've got more of the Japanese armor that starts being applied. But at this point, that's not something that's just happening just yet. Might start.
Well, this is like Japan, like again, like we're talking feudal Japan. I wonder what happened to all like the other things that were going on with Japan at the time. Like, is there any kind of like anime inspired, it's like a Pikachu mech.
I'm sure that there's still some of that going on, but I think this is down to some of the designs of the founding members of the house. They were quite keen into that with some of their history, so they kind of wouldn't say forced it upon people, but kind of encouraged it. So it's
a bunch of old fuddy duddies.
Obviously for them it's just going back into some of the history and them trying to relive it, talking about that Fallout kind of thing. I suppose it's kind of like Caesar from Caesar's Legion, kind of bringing back some of the things he thought was good in the past from Rome. This is some guys bringing back some of the Japanese culture they think was good from their past.
Oh, it's neoclassical Japan.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Popular mechs, you'll see dragons, Panthers, quite a lot of them. Maulers, I'm sure Tommy's going to be rolling around that now because he wanted me to say it's the Debaku. Debaku?
It's the Debaku.
Debaku.
Mauler isn't a DCMS mech. It's a Fedson mech.
No. Same thing.
So before we move on from that, what are you talking about? Because I'm lost.
Some of the mechs have different names depending on where they've been produced. It depends if they've been reimagined by different manufacturers in different areas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not a big thing. It's just there was a mech that was designed by the DCMS called the Debaku. It really didn't get past the trial stage. They deployed it during a It didn't go very well, so they shelved it, and then about 11 years later, the Fedsons picked it up, renamed it, and actually made it half decent.
Yeah.
Which, much to my chagrin.
Cool. And also, they're known because they do love a PPC. As you'll see going forward, if you look at like their mechs, they carry PPCs, or they usually add PPCs to their mechs. Cool. That's pretty much the Draconis Combine. Any questions on that, guys? Anything you wanted me to...
I heard about this thing called the Dragon. What's going on with that, Lewis?
What do you mean, the Dragon?
The Dragon?
Or Dragon Mech, or the Dragon the person?
No, whenever I hear the DCMS brought up, or the Draconis in general, I always go, I need to do this for the Dragon.
Well, the Dragon would be the coordinator... That's who they're referring to with that.
I feel like going by the name The Dragon is significantly cooler by going than going by the name The Coordinator. The Coordinator is like you're in a dance troupe. The Dragon makes you sound like you're in a medieval battle.
Technically, his full title is The Coordinator of Worlds. That's it is slightly
cool.
Better.
That's cooler.
Yeah,
you
it's
sound like a bit of a boffin though, don't you? You're still a bit of a boffin.
I don't think you'd say that. You wouldn't say that to his face. I don't think he'd. You wouldn't be around for too much longer.
Right. So you're saying that he's got like the protein shakes. He goes to the gym. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I'm just saying you'd probably find there'd be some swords in your back, in your front, and around you. Cool. So yeah, that's. Pretty much the Combine. They're not big fans of the Lyran Commonwealth and not big fans of the Federated Sons. They're often fighting people and they're usually looking for a scrap and trying to expand their territory. Cool.
And just curious, is it Sons as in the star or is it Sons as in the offspring?
Sons as in the star, S-U-N-S. Yeah. Cool. And then, that's pretty much the five main houses, the major players in the Indiana Sphere. I don't know if there's anyone else we really want to talk about a major player.
I mean, is there anyone else we can really talk about? Those are the main factions. I mean, it's not like a secret Sith faction or anything, is there?
I think this is where the ominous boss music turns on.
Yeah.
No, the last faction, and in my opinion, the most important, I'm not biased in any way, shape, or form. Is Comstar. We've talked a lot about the Great Houses running the Inner Sphere, but one planet stands firm as sort of this independent entity that just wants to keep on with what it's doing, and that is Terra. Now, a little bit of Battletech history. In the 2600s, these things called hyperpulse generators get created. And this allows you to send information across the stars real quick. It basically... And then they get built on loads of these worlds. And a organization known as... I think it's the Ministry of Communications gets set up, run by a man known as... Well, towards the end, known as Jerome Blake. As everything kind of falls apart during the Amara Civil War, Jerome Blake decides that what his you guys need to do, rather than getting involved in shooting each other, is make sure these HPG networks stay set.
HPG being what?
Hyperpulse generator.
Okay.
So they're usually shortened down to HPGs. And so he kind of just organizes all his lads and ladettes to keep these things running so that we can, as humanity, we can just keep speaking to each other, because it would be quite catastrophic if all of them sort of turned off all at once.
Yeah, that would be real bad.
Yeah, it would be real terrible. That would never happen. So after the sort of Star League falls apart, there is kind of the question of what to do with Earth. And it is sort of posited that you need, because communications is so important to every faction. They all agree, and this is probably the only thing they do agree on, that the people that run it need to be independent. And so Comstar set up. Sometimes known as the Order instead. Comstar runs all the hyperpulse generator networks, runs all the traffic, and is sort of informally known as the phone company. And that's all they do.
Yeah.
If only. Well, actually, no, that isn't all they officially do either. They have something. No, so the currency in BattleTech, there's local currencies within each of the areas. But if you want cold hard cash, similar to gold bullion, in BattleTech, it's known as the C bill, which is known as the Comstar bill. And that's what all of the currencies are pegged against.
That's you use time on the HBG networks, doesn't it, Tom?
Yes. Everything Comstar does is paid in C-bills. Cool. And it is the most valuable currency in the Inner Sphere.
Cool.
And what do they do with all these C-bills? Well, they set up the Comstar News Bureau, for one. So you can get all of your information across the Inner Sphere. They also, less importantly, set up something called the Mercenary Review Board, which is how you hire and fire mercenaries.
Cool.
And this is sort of a very big thing, seeing as the mercenary market is blooming massive.
Cool. And a lot of the guys, Tom, seem to be wearing robes of the current period. It looks a bit odd for something that sounds to be quite a
corporate
business, scientific kind of place. What's going on there?
Well, there was a bit of a problem where Jerome Blake happened to write some of his ideas down, and then after he died, he kind of got immortalized as kind of a messianic being. So they kind of worship him as a god.
Yeah,
it's odd.
So, but is that known to the Inner Sphere, or is that more of a kind of something they keep for themselves?
I think it's something they more keep to themselves. The more kind of corporate side of it, it's pretty, like, you know, it's kind of, they have the hoods down when they're talking to customers, and then when they go in the back rooms, the hoods are back up.
Yeah.
And they're looking like wizards.
I don't know how I feel about a god called Jerome.
He's Jerome Blake.
It feels like a very, like, innocuous name.
If you look him up as well, he's got that very Abraham Lincoln look to him as well. He's not like a...
Yeah, he does.
So it's Abe Simpson, but he's a god. Okay, got you.
Well, he's seen as a messianic being, and then those that follow his teaching are known as Blakeists. This won't come up later.
No.
What are those teachings, by any chance? What's like the general dogma of Comstar?
Well, the dogma is you gotta stop the Inner Sphere from killing itself. What the Succession Wars have taught Comstar, or what they have taken away from the Succession Wars, I should probably say, is that the Inner Sphere and the Great Houses are really good at killing themselves, and they're also really good at losing technology.
Yeah.
So Comstar kind of needs to keep their fingers on the scales to make sure everyone stays pretty equal. And they do this probably through their less than licit... methods. That gentleman earlier that I was talking about, when we were talking about the Anton Revolt, the one that I said was definitely not affiliated to everyone.
Yeah. Is that Marek?
Anton Marek's Revolt, yeah. So he had an advisor who came straight from Comstar and attempted to assist in that. Whilst they have this sort of public-facing thing where they are very kind of, very good guys, they do have something known as
ROM agents.
Which is, the ROM agency is the intelligence agency. Imagine the CIA on steroids. Their fingers are in every pie.
Delicious.
And they are very, very, very much willing to do anything they can to keep things as sort of as standard as possible. They are what they want is they just want things to stay the same and people not to kill each other, which means that when people kind of go against that and start making moves, they start falling out windows.
Yeah. Well, they've, I suppose, the people that control all communication throughout the whole of the galaxy, also being a CIA kind of equivalent, does mean that they can kind of do whatever they want, and they can they can send your information or change your information if they want to, or do what they want, really. There's been a few reports as well at this time period as well, Tom, of mechs appearing without any symbols on logos, painted in white.
Don't look underneath the Terran basements. There's no one there.
No one there.
Don't worry about it.
No one there.
They definitely do not have a secret army on Terra waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. They do. There's a secret army on Terra. So the Comstar, their military arm is known as the Comguard. They haven't done anything officially ever.
Yeah.
They will be important later, but at the moment, they kind of... Sometimes some of their mechs go missing and turn up in pirates' hands, killing certain people.
Yeah.
That's all that happened. But, obviously, with all of that, who runs Comstar? And this is an incredible question. So, the Comstar is broken down into circuits. So, the first circuit is known as the governing body of the of Comstar, and therefore oversees the hyperpulse generators. So, the person that runs the first circuit is known as the Prime Administrator, or Primus. At the time,
did that song about the fishermen.
They did. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
But the guys from Primus run the inner circle of Comstar.
yes, they do. Yeah. And at this time, in 3025, the Primus is Julian Tiepolo. That will never change. He's a very strong man. Strong heart. And then, so underneath the Primus are known as Precentors. And each of those has, like, an area that they administrate. So, the first circuit is 10 members. Which is like they each have a certain area, so you might have Primus Cian or Primus Tharkad. So that is not Primus, sorry, Precentor Tharkad. So these are different areas, and obviously, what these guys do is they're trying to keep a balance with each other. So each of them will argue for their case why something in their area needs to be done, and they will sort of vote. In a secret society kind of way, around a dusty table, probably with some cigarette smoke, because it's the faux 80s. And this is sort of how the Inner Spheres run for about 200 years.
So it's like clandestine meetings, very opaque kind of scenarios. There's no ombudsman in battle.
No, it's a bunch of men in grey suits.
Okay.
But everyone sort of outside of Comstar just thinks of them as this kind of phone company that's doing their own thing. Meanwhile, they are having this massive impact on everything. And they will certainly have more impact going forward.
True.
Cool. And that's Comstar. We've included them here because they are often referred to as the sixth secret great house. Probably greatest of them all.
I don't know about that, but they do have a lot of sway, and you'll find they're, as Tom said, involved with most of the things going on in the Inner Sphere to some extent. Cool. Any questions on Comstar? Other than that? Well, I think Tom's pretty much covered it. Pretty much, I think, anything.
I feel like I've learned a lot about Comstar. I'm especially impressed by the idea of these sort of circuits and these little... I like the reference to circuits in their organizational structure. I think that's very fun. I think the guys that were writing the lore were having a bit of fun with that. I find the most interesting thing for me is the fact that it's like a secret house. It's like it would be like an open secret though. If you've got this organization that's so large, it's effectively like an oligarchy, right? They're kind of running everything. They're kind of the hub for everyone else. They control the mercenaries, which obviously fight against one another. Sort of these guys seem like the absolute powerhouse. So the fact that they're referred to as a secret implies that it's sort of an open secret. Is that kind of right?
I would actually say no. Very few people understand Comstar's true power. Even those who are very much in the know aren't aware of this. I think the second edge to the sword that is Comstar is their kind of religious fanaticism. These people are like watertight when it comes to operational security with information. Like, they would rather die than let anyone know what's going on. So, Right. They are kind of these, like, ROM operatives are these perfect operatives that will go in, and even if they fail, they just won't reveal anything. And so, whilst, like, other organizations kind of, the game's up for some other people, because, you know, someone spills the beans. With this one, no one has sort of connected the dots.
Not yet. Okay, not
so
anyway.
Okay. From the outside, it seems like we're just the phone company. From the inside, it's this sort of sprawling political organization.
It's kind of like if the Mormons ran the telephones, but then secretly there were the Illuminati.
Right, well, Nathan, you're going to get the podcast shut down because now you've just literally told everyone.
I've exposed them now.
You've exposed the telephone Mormons.
Damn.
Cool.
The Mormon megachurch who runs the telephone company.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Nathan's pet conspiracy theory.
Cool. So that's the major players in the Inner Sphere anyway. There are some more people or some more areas we probably want to have a talk about in the near future. But for now, let's finish up this section and let's move on to the outro. Catch you guys in a minute. And welcome back to the outro. And thank you guys for listening. And thank you for all the support and feedback we've had so far from both the podcast community and the guys listening. And also a special thank you to the guys from the BattleTech UK Discord who have been giving us a bunch of pointers. If you've got anything you want to send to us, we've got the email, which is hexpertshelpline@gmail.com. Follow us, and if you want to mention or comment, you can do on stuff like our Instagram, which is hexperts_battletech_podcast. And I think we've got TikToks and YouTubes, which I'll be putting them in the show notes. Anything else you guys want to shout out before we finish up? No? Okay, well...
No.
Okay, if you're nothing, that's fine. Well, next week, I think we'll have a look at the periphery states. That's pretty much all she wrote. Guys, we'll see you next time. See you later, guys.
Bye-bye, everyone.